Session number 12933.
Than real five. So, but were these buffaloes transported in ships?
Yeah, they were landing craft tanks, I think they were, or something similar to that. I don't really I can't remember the exact designation of them, but they were very big landing craft which had which were obviously designed for tanks and things like that. And on the run-in, of course, this time, as opposed to D-Day, we were in the open because the deck there was just this open deck with the landing platforms right in front of us, so they could be dropped onto the beaches. And this time we saw everything as we went in, which was rather a change. And what we were making for in the island of Auckland was a gap which had been blown by the RAF. The whole of the island had been flooded internally, but of course the Germans had put all their fortifications obviously around the edges, and they were all big concrete emplacements like the Atlantic Wall. And they were very heavily defended. Royal Marines manned our own little gunboats, so we were going to take these on. And there was also rocket ships which shot off scores of rockets at a time. But often with these, they couldn't get close enough because of the drifty opposition from the beaches that they fell short. I remember seeing them falling short and even coming my way really once or twice. So they all didn't get to the enemy by any means. Some of them landed in amongst us. We were told that there could possibly be flame, or there were fixed flame throwers on this part of the beach as well. So that was something that was something to look forward to. And the air raid, which should have preceded our invasion, was called off because of the weather. So we didn't have that, and it was a rather a mad dash for this one gap. And of course, the guns from other enemy positions on the island were aimed at this gap. Naturally, when they realised what was going on, we headed for this gap, and our buffalo made it off all right. We got into the village of Walkrum. We dismounted, and in the street to our front was a strong point. I think it was the bottom, it's the base of a lighthouse. Anyway, we found ourselves off the road, and the other corporal of the troop, we mustered in a house that had been very badly damaged, and it was also waterlogged. And I found the old hands in there were getting a brew of tea going, as we were being pretty wet and feeling pretty miserable at the time and what have you. So somebody got the old brew going, and we had a quick cup of tea. And then we found ourselves joining the rest of the troop when they came up, and we made towards this lighthouse. And there was some firing and everything going on down the street, but they were winkled out. And we made our way round on the rim of the crater, as it were, because our job was to get down to Domburg, where there was some very heavy artillery, coastal artillery, heavy batteries. And our job was to get down as far as we could on that flank, and take these batteries. So we did a kind of a forced march along there. This time, much to my discomfort, I found that I had dysentery, or a form of it, so I wasn't very palatable to my mates, and I wasn't feeling very happy either, because I couldn't stop. We were under a forced march. Just one of the trials and tribulations of a marine, I suppose. And we made our way as fast as we could towards the Domburg. When we, troop commander Captain Sheridan, he was one of the first up to this strong point, and unfortunately he was killed there. A lot of the Germans gave themselves up. When I got along there with our section, it actually had happened. But it's a very sad occasion for us, because it's just one of those darn things where they appeared to be giving themselves up, I think, and somebody decided not to, and that made it all very blasted angry. The our section, we spent the night, our section sergeant, Sergeant Orchard, he kept an eye on about, several hundred Germans who had given themselves up. And it was one of these rather nasty situations where people were giving themselves up and some weren't. And we had to look at this strong point, and anyway, at the top of it, there was still somebody in possession. We got in the control room and everything else like that, and that was disconnected and what have you. But there's still somebody in the top, and it was decided to leave until the morning. But what happened was they got drunk. It was probably the people who shot our troop captain, we think. They got drunk, and they didn't do any firing. They didn't give us any trouble for any firing at us at all randomly. But they did get the various pistols out and started firing all their screaming crackers and parachute flares, everything else they could do. And in the morning, they gave themselves up. So that was Domburg. And then we had to push on to the next position, which is a bit further along the coast. I've forgotten the battery now. And we went along the sands on a marked path, because it was all heavily mined. And this one was going to give us some trouble, but it was single file. So it was always unfortunate the people up in front that got the trouble first and walked into it, whatever it was. And we got a few shells which seemed to be spinning along the valley which we were going along. But they didn't last very long, and they gave themselves up too when they presumably saw the position. So that was really the sort of ending. Very unsatisfactory in some ways, but having lost our troop commander, very sad. And then we used the Domburg battery, and we stayed there for a bit to consolidate, and we'd done what we were required to do on that particular occasion.
Were you then pulled out of the battle after out of the fighting after the battle for
Walter? We stayed there for a bit. I forget exactly how long, maybe a week or something. I repaired a German gun, because we haven't got any guns. I repaired an anti-tank gun, because having been Sea Marine, I knew a bit about breech mechanisms and things. And I used to amuse myself firing in the general direction. We were stood down. There was no panic had sort of gone. The enemy had gone from our part. Anyway, a few of us did that. A few of us had a BMW they were riding around. We just relaxed for a few days and had some decent grub. See, one of the things was that when we were going to Walcheren, it was so rough, again it was rough, they couldn't land our food. And when we found the German food dumps, they were all mined and booby-trapped. So it was a question of forcing the Germans to go down first and undo all these nasties before we could get some food out. But when we did get the food out, we'd never had such good food in all our lives. German sausages. I suppose were much appreciated, but they were quite different to our sausages, and there's plenty of meat in them, as I believe there still is today. but we were really hard put with no rations coming up at all until we could break into the Germans. So it was another incentive for getting into their rations.
Did any of the Germans get blown up by those booby traps?
Not to my knowledge. I think they realised then that they, it was up for them. They didn't intend getting killed after that, I don't suppose. Not to my knowledge, no.
After Walcheren, did you go into Germany?
Well, oh no, we went on the Marne. What we did after Walcheren, we went in to the main village of Walcheren.
Oh, blimey, I can't think of what that is now.
And we stayed there at a school. and we rested there. And our job was to patrol the canals, because they expected the Germans to counterattack and probably use paratroops along the canals to drop behind the Canadian troops and the ones that are pushing forward along the Scheldt estuary. And our job was to be in reserve and patrol these areas, and which we did troop and troop about. So we rested in the town. Isn't it funny? I can't remember the name of the town now.
It's not Flushing, is it?
No. It's the main town inland. No, we didn't do Flushing. That was the Light Brigade did that. Anyway, we were made most welcome there. We were in billets there for a bit. We went to a show there where the ladies did, the local theatre group did clog dancing, and we rested there for a bit and did these patrols. Later on we moved up to Bergen op Zoom, and then the snow was on the ground and it was really cold. We got into training again for more serious work, and the conditions were pretty awful. We used to go on exercises and just stay out in the open overnight in the snow in different positions to harden us up, because what we were going on was we were going to go and take up positions on the Mars. It's Sertogenbosch on the Mars. There was a bridge over the Mars at Sertogenbosch, and we had our own weasels there because a lot of the ground was flooded, very low lying, and our job was to take over from the Canadians, and the conditions were absolutely appalling. They reported to or told us that it was so cold that because they had, in the foxholes, that they actually got frozen feet at the bottom of the foxholes. Their feet were frozen into the ice at the bottom of the foxhole overnight. So you can tell how bleak, and the whole place was covered in snow. And the only place we had to go was to a barge. There was a barge, a big barge, moored in one of the canals, and they used to have a fire in that at night time. And of course, Jerry couldn't see the smoke. And we used to go there and have a warm up, and then back out and have a meal or something, and then back out again. We took over the Canadians who took their Brownings, which had an awful lot of firepower, and our humble Bren went down. And we manned the bank of the Mars above this blown down bridge, and all our to transport there were in our little weasels, which are tracked vehicles, and they used to take us there and bring us back because of the bad going in the snow, slush and everything else. On our left was a Polish formation, and we had to be instructed in that passwords had to be that they could pronounce, because apparently Germans can't pronounce, I think it was TH, and we had to make certain that our passwords were also pronounceable by the Polish. Of course, a very similar sort of language, I believe. We also used to go down to the bottom of this bridge and man some fortifications. And a lot of these fortifications, of course, were built by the Germans to protect the bridge. And it was our turn to go down and man these fortifications by the bridge. And we used to go down in the evening and relieve the troop there. And of course, there was a good road that led down to the bridge. It's all modern road. And of course, the bridge was a modern one. And our troop were steaming down. They used to put some speed on. We used to have jeeps with trailers on the back. We all used to jump on the trailer, and we used to really get some speed up so that we wouldn't make a very good target. But once when we were dashing down there, we were obviously observed. But halfway down, shells started landing all around us. Of course, they got the Rangers, knew the Rangers perfectly there. And we dived out of our mobiles, and in the middle of the several places in the middle of the roadway was a few sandbags piled on top, with one or two piled side by side, one or two on the top. And you all die for one of these little hidey hole things on the tarmac. And they had to wait until these salvos were over. They got too darn close for comfort because it was medium artillery that was firing at us. They pinned us down for a bit, and you just kept your fingers crossed. When they got fed up with it, we all crawled out of our between the sandbags and jumped back into the trailers again, and away we zoomed again before somebody could start firing again, and made our way down to the other fortifications, the bottom of this bridge. And there we used to keep an eye on Jerry and keep an eye on the water for any crossings and what have you. And we had a little troop headquarters in a fortification, a little dugout. And I thought it looked like just one of these American card schools where the lads were playing cards, dingy lighting. There was no ooch, that was anything that was missing, but it looked like a really low dive there. Subdued lighting and lads playing cards and everything else. I was just looking around. And it was my turn to go out and man the Bren. It was a Bren position that was cocked up over the top of the side of the over the side of the battlements, as it were. And when it got dark, the Germans would open fire in our direction. They couldn't see anything. It was just nuisance fire, really. But their Spandaus and their weapons were, all their small arms were far superior to ours. We'd have had their weapons and that, we'd have won the war long before we did. But of course they got ready for the war and we weren't. And you get a whole belt of Spandau come sort of brushing past in tracer coming past. And our brain, we used to hear, and they used to go bob, 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 bob. And the Spaniards go, an old belt used to shoot across. Talk about firepower, they had it every time. But I thought it best not to give my position away, so that time I remember I used to watch it go over. It was going harmlessly anyway. And when the chaps asked him when I got back, he didn't return. And I said, what's the bastard good? I said, you're only firing at an embankment on the other side of a small hole. All they're trying to do is draw your fire, you see, to find out exactly where you were. But then that's when it really, well, it struck me before in the early stage of Normandy, that whenever the Germans fired with their weapons, is a whole belt at a time of spring-driven gun, Spandau. And ours would be an old Bren. And I remember when I think it was the Paras moved away from the position we took over from, that they had a K-gun, which was a Browning used on the, I believe it was used on Swordfish in 1914 with the fighter planes, the blast of great magazine, a big round magazine. And when that K-gun went off, it gave you a lot of comfort. Because when they left, they took the K-gun with them. But when it came to firepower, ours were really very pathetic, really, compared to any of the Germans turned out. So that was our stay, really, at Zeltogenbosch. And the one thing I would say, I should never forget, as close, we used to have to, when we went back for rest periods behind the line, well, I say behind the line, it was just a few hundred yards inland, a small village, which was just out of range and they didn't bother about. There was a coffee bar there, and when we went for a meal and everything else, and we had a few hours before we went back again, we used to go on the coffee bar. This man by the Salvation Army, the Red Shield. And ever since that day, I've always admired the Salvation Army and the Red Shield. They're right up there with the frontline troops. Tea, buns, and all the little knickknacks that weren't gettable anywhere else. And for that reason, I still support fully the Salvation Army whenever I see them. Sometimes they thank me for the money, and I said, no, it's me thanking you. And I tell them a story.
So when did you move into Germany?
Well, we didn't move into Germany until the end of the war. We were still in down the Satoga Bush area and what have you. And then we went back. We went back to Bergen op Zoom, and we were taken by lorry load out of we had V-Day in Bergen op Zoom, and then we went up to we were taken to Cologne. They said, "Well, you'll go and see Germany, the way we've been, you know, fighting to get to." We were taken up on trucks, and we went to outside Cologne. And went to an American field kitchen, and I'd never seen such food or such beautiful kitchen arrangements in all my life. I was handed a mug with something in it, and I think chap said something about coffee, and we had some superfood, and we just went out and sat under the trees to enjoy this food. And I, after a bit, and I took a sip of the coffee. And I absolutely spit it out. I thought, blimey, that's so hot. I thought it'd be cool by now. And then I looked at it again. It was iced coffee. Never had it before in my life. And it was so cold, with a punch in the tongue. Stupid. And little experience. Anyway, we went to Cologne. Went round the cathedral. We could see the cathedral still standing, although damaged. We had a look at the bridge across the river. And out of due respect to everybody else, we lined up. And without shame, we christened the river. That's what we thought about it all.
Why did you do it?
That's just how we felt. You don't ask why. We were then taken through some German countryside. I don't know whether it was wheat. I think it was. But when we looked at the German countryside, absolutely beautiful, absolutely untouched. And we did stay on a German farm for a period of time. The farms were not like